Hello and welcome back to the InFlight Dublin podcast. Given that it's March and therefore it was St. Patrick's Day quite recently, our focus this month is going to be Irish films. So today we have Emer here, who's going to talk about one of her favourite Irish films, and then I'll talk about one of mine. So, Emer.
Yeah, it was an exciting thing to try and think back to all the Irish films I've watched over my life. And one that really stood out to me, which I would have seen when I was about 15, I guess, was Breakfast on Pluto. And I actually rewatched it this weekend and I was kind of expecting it not to live up to my expectations, but it like surpassed them. It was so good.
I love when that happens.
Yeah, it's rare.
Yeah.
So yeah, just to give a bit of background on it, it's directed by Neil Jordan, who also did The Butcher Boy and The Crying Game. Very well-respected Irish director, also writer. And it's another collaboration with Pat McCabe, who wrote The Butcher Boy. And so he wrote Breakfast on Pluto.
I didn't know Breakfast on Pluto was a book.
Yes, it was a book first. Okay. I actually studied it in college and it's quite close to what is in the film, but it kind of differs a lot too, in a way. Like, they get the essence of Patrick Kitten Braden, who's the main character played by Cillian Murphy in the film. And so they collaborated on the screenplay. So Pat McCabe obviously had a big input in it and he actually stars in it as well.
Okay.
In a little cameo. So the story kind of remains the same. And it's like not one of those ones where it's set in New York now because it's made into a movie. It's still set in a small town in County Cavan. It's a fictional town. Basically, it's like split into about 36 chapters.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of picaresque film is what they call it, where it's just kind of following Patrick Kitten Braden through his life. From like when he was like turfed on a doorstep by his mother. He's described as a foundling, which I've never heard this word before, but it basically means like an infant who is found after its unknown parents have abandoned it. So kind of think Moses or Mowgli or something. So he's left outside the doorstep anyway of Father Liam, who's played by Liam Neeson. So it actually turns out that Father Liam is in fact his father. Mm-hmm. And that his real mother is the housekeeper that was sent to Father Liam's house. And basically, the film is just Patrick, who is transgender in the film. And so, like, from an early age, he's seen dressing in his foster mother's clothes. And he has to be called Kitten. He wants to do home economics so he can, like, bejewel all his outfits. And it's set in a very kind of the 60s Ireland, sort of. So, obviously, not the most liberal place to be growing up in. So, as you can imagine, like, he faces a lot of adversity in the town. But, it's sort of Dickensian in the way that like his spirit kind of triumphs throughout. And because it's also set in a border town in Ireland during the 70s, 60s, 70s, there's a lot of the Troubles mixed into it, which I actually hadn't remembered until I rewatched it. Mm-hmm. So you have like Patrick Kitten coming of age, but also like in this very kind of murky atmosphere where there is, you know, like bombings and gun running and like, it's sort of he tries to keep like above it and separate to it, and he doesn't want to be serious. It's all fun, but in fact, like his life can't but be touched by it. So it's actually mad the amount of Irish musicians who are in the movie as well. It opens with Mary Coughlan as Father Liam's housekeeper, and then one of the first people that Kitten comes into contact with after running away from home is Gavin Friday.
Oh, no.
Who's, yeah, playing the leader of a glam rock band called Billy Hatchet and the Mohawks, which is a great name. So they kind of have a little bit of a tryst, and it actually turns out that Hatchet is involved in the IRA. And after one of Kitten's childhood friends is killed by a bomb, it turns kind of dark, but then also kind of maintains the kind of like, because it's all split into chapters, it has this kind of dreamlike humour the whole time as well. So, you know, the binary is sort of between the seriousness and the unseriousness of the film. You know, like Kitty kind of goes into sort of like dream sequences as well, where she's imagining being a spy exactly, and she's taking down the IRA with her perfume, or the RBF, or, yeah, taking down the guns with perfume. So that's pretty cool. And so like there's that kind of stuff interwoven with real scenes where she's, you know, in a club and a bomb goes off, or, you know, stuff like that.
I think the creation of that fairy tale world is, you know, probably psychologically a defense mechanism against the brutality of her environment, you know, and what's going on around her.
Oh, and you can call me Kitten, Father. Kitten? Yes, Patrick Kitten Braden, after seeing Kitten.
But yeah, I'd say the best cameo in it has to be Brendan Gleeson as a Womble. It is so good. Those kind of instances of just like an Irish actor doing a great turn, like him, Stephen Ray as well, is brilliant in it as a magician. And you have Ruth Negga in one of her earliest roles as well as Patrick's best friend, Charlie, who has a pretty sad story too, where she falls pregnant, decides to keep the baby, and the father of the baby actually dies. He's one of their childhood friends, which is another kind of instance of the troubles touching Kitten's story as much as she would like to not be thinking about the troubles. You know, it'll invade. So yeah, it's just interesting. And one way it differs from the book as well is that she ends up meeting the mother, because Father Liam sort of has a bit of a redemptive end in that he follows Kitten to London and they kind of meet. Kitten's working in a peep show over there. So it's kind of between one way mirrored glass, sort of like in Paris, Texas, that incredible scene from Paris, Texas, where there's a reunion behind the glass and they're talking to each other, but she can't see Liam Neeson, but he's telling her that he's always loved her and gives her the address of the mother, who Kitten then goes to visit but never reveals who she is, which is sort of like, in a way, it's kind of great the way that it holds up as well, in that, like, you know, there's no story to be learnt from the life that Kitten has chosen to live to go over to London. It's kind of implied that she has to fall onto like prostitution and everything else, but, you know, different pronouns are used indiscriminately, like no one tragically dies for not conforming to the gender binary. And it all ends like happily with the establishment of an alternative kind of family unit, because Kitten and Charlie live happily ever after together, and she's kind of become a mother figure then to this baby, and is kind of that's all she needs. She doesn't need her own mother anymore. So it's, yeah, it's funny because 2005 seems to have been a purple patch for LGBTQ movies, because Breakfast on Pluto actually came out the same year as Brokeback Mountain and Transamerica.
Oh,
if you remember that.
Yeah.
So Felicity Huffman in Transamerica also plays a transgender character.
Yeah.
And I mean, those three films were quite successful. Cillian Murphy was nominated for a Golden Globe for his turn. Felicity Huffman won the Golden Globe for hers. And Brokeback Mountain also won, but obviously lost out in the Oscar.
Yeah.
So it just kind of like 2005, I wouldn't have thought of it, but it seems to have been a bit of a turning point in terms of like all these films seem to have opened up more opportunities for, like, you know, stories like this to be told. And yeah, it's something that I'm glad I rewatched it.
Yeah.
And the costuming is incredible as well. Like at the beginning, Patrick Kitten, when she's kind of coming into her own, is just kind of, she does home ec and kind of bejewels all her shirts and school jumpers, and then it's like flares and like tight fitting shirts and fur coats and stuff. But by the end, she's in amazing, like a red leather jacket for one particular scene, which is actually a really memorable scene where the bomb actually goes off while she's in the club. And Neil Jordan actually specifically took out red from everyone else in the extras and behind. So it's just Cillian Murphy standing out, like, yeah. And by the end as well, they chose curls for just to kind of like give it Cillian Murphy's face, which is already incredibly beautiful, like more sort of femininity. And by the end, it's this amazing blonde wig that she's in as Kitten. And it's just, yeah, it's just, it's a wonderful kind of sight for the eyes.
The visual parts of the movie, I wanted to be very, very graphic. I wanted it to be very dynamic. I wanted it to be, I didn't want any specific colour scheme or anything like that, but I mean, obviously the main colour in the film is the costumes. As the character begins to find himself or herself, the film becomes much, much, much more colourful, you know what I mean?
It's a great film, and I would definitely recommend rewatching it if you don't, if you don't remember it.
Yeah, I absolutely do not remember it. I know I saw it and I remember coming out of the cinema and absolutely like raving about it, but I don't remember a single thing about it. So you have inspired me to rewatch that.
And for Cillian Murphy, like, I think he fought for that role. He definitely convinced Neil Jordan to go ahead and make it, because obviously he would have been close to Pat McCabe anyway, but just because he kind of saw his like window of opportunity to play Kitten before he got too old.
Yeah.
And like this came out the same year as like Batman Begins, in which he was also in, playing a completely different role.
Oh, wow, Scarecrow.
Yeah, the Scarecrow. So they were both 2005, and you see Cillian Murphy and like his range is just incredible.
Yeah.
And just his like willingness to just go places and And he actually has a little musical number with Gavin Friday in it as well, which is just, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I need to rewatch this.
Do it. You will not regret it at all.
Okay. So the movie that I'm going to talk about is a horror movie. It's just released recently and it's called The Hole in the Ground. It's starring Shauna Kerslake, who was also in A Date for Mad Mary, which I also absolutely loved. It was just such a fun movie, but this is a very different vibe. So this is directed by Lee Cronin, and it's basically, it's about a young mother who has to move away from her kind of comfortable life, or her relatively comfortable life, given that she's in an actual abusive relationship. So she has to move away. She takes her son and she moves away to a new small town. Basically, some spooky stuff starts happening and she ends up not really recognizing her son. And it turns out that there's been this hole in the ground, which does not play as big a part as you might think from the title of the movie. But he kind of runs out towards this hole. It's like a sinkhole in the woods near their house. And he kind of disappears for a few seconds and she's run after him. And then when he reappears, he's something possessed, yeah. Possibly, or, you know...
Mrs. Brady. Mrs. Brady.
It's not your boy.
So it's sort of, it's an interesting film because, you know, we get a lot of these horror movies where these mothers are stuck in their houses and they become afraid of their children for various reasons. Mm. Like you've got kind of Babadook and Sinister and Insidious and all these sorts of things.
The Omen.
The Omen, exactly. Yeah. But it seems to, in recent years, it seems to be focusing in on the single mothers. And, you know, it can get a little bit tiring because you're just kind of like, okay, well, like, let's find something new. But I found this one quite interesting because it sort of brings about the question of what would you do if you just found out that your child was becoming someone you didn't like? Mm-hmm. You know, like, ultimately, this son is actually like some ground living monster who wants to eat, like devour people and everything, so naturally you won't like that. But it presents this other question about, like, what if your son is just someone you don't like, you know, what happens? So it's sort of an interesting one. It definitely scared me. I thought that the sound was really well done,
really good. Yeah
So, like, we saw it in the cinema, so obviously the sound is always going to be good in the cinema.
I also watched it in the cinema, but I could imagine that, you know, if you had a good stereo system at home, it would work well as well. And
okay.
Just yeah, and I thought the shots were amazing of the trees, because obviously it's filmed in, is it Finland as well, as it's kind of a joint production, and it's you kind of don't know where you are in it. They never name the place or anything, and it's sort of, it's very eerie.
It's funny because actually I think the opening shots, they're driving through Bray, which is where I grew up. So in my head it was all in Bray. It's just like, oh, I could see this happening in Bray.
Some spooky things in Bray. For sure.
But so it was just really interesting, and I think that Irish horror in general is having a little bit of a moment.
For sure.
So I also wanted to talk very briefly, because I saw it a few years ago, but I wanted to talk very briefly about Without Name.
This is the eco horror.
This is the eco horror. So basically, Without Name, it's this guy needs to go out and he's creating maps of this area, and it's, he's just like, he's a surveyor who's undertaken this task to go and survey this like ancient land. And he goes kind of crazy, but it's the environmental element of it is so interesting. And when I saw it, I went to a special IFI showing where the director also was showing one of his shorts beforehand. And I can't remember the name of the short, but the short, basically it was like this ghost estate. And it had been kind of built, and then obviously developers had left. And foxes were sort of taking over. And it's just so interesting because there's this one family living in this ghost estate. So they bought their house and they're like obviously in negative equity and all this sort of stuff going on. But the foxes were taking over and it was driving the family who were there crazy.
Their milk was probably ripped to shreds.
Ripped to shreds. It was horrifying.
Yeah, there's a horror in that, I think.
So essentially, I think one of the members of the family kind of goes out to, like, you know, get the foxes to go away because they're like shrieking, and you know the sound of foxes.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. It's and like then, a woman screaming.
Exactly.
Of, yeah.
It's like a banshee. I think that's where banshee came from.
Okay.
But one of the members of the family goes out to like chase the foxes away, ends up chasing them for too long, and like then turns into a fox.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is just, it's a really interesting sort of, you know, nature taking
over
and taking back what rightfully belongs and this sort of thing. But that, like, there are aspects of that in Without Name as well.
Oh, Without Name.
Yeah, sorry, I did move on.
And
the director of that was Lorcan Finnegan, which I just had forgotten briefly. But yeah, so I think those are two really good Irish horror movies that I've seen recently. And yeah, just
Extraordinary is coming out as well, which is sort of like a comedy horror, it looks like.
Oh, I don't. What's this?
With Maeve Higgins in it. I think she plays a driving instructor who can converse with the dead, possibly.
Okay.
I think Will Forte is in it as well. Is that how you pronounce his name? Will Forte? Yeah. But it looks great. I think it's only a teaser trailer that's out so far, but like the promotional image for it as well is just very cute. It's just a little ghost peeking out of a bin.
Oh,
so if you watch the teaser trailer, I think they've done a great job of making it sound like a very old Irish style like advertisement for something. And then you've got Maeve Higgins, who I just think is so great.
I love
just
her.
Being Maeve Higgins. And yeah, it's just that brilliant kind of like, I feel like the Irish have a good sense of a gothic tale.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's sort of mixed in with the humour of it all. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's it from us with regards to Irish film. And we will be back next month with a mystery podcast.
Mystery podcast.
Thank you.